Chick-fil-A no longer contributing to anti-gay groups, but still contributing to heart attacks. More and more damning evidence against Trump at today's impeachment hearings. In a final desperate attempt, Republicans demand Jehovah's Witnesses. And doctors at Walter Reed Medical Center say a scan of President Trump's brain shows nothing. Well, welcome to the Wolfpack. I'm Carl Wolfson along with Kim Upham and Dylan Hides. Paul Block not with us tonight. Our producer, of course, the great Patrick Zahn, would come to you from the Steel Door Gallery and Lane Gallery in the beautiful northwest of Portland, Oregon. And let me explain that Paul's not here because a new poll showed him running fourth in the Iowa caucuses, and he ran to Dubuque to campaign. So he's
smart
in the running.
Man.
Yeah.
Better than being fourth on the Wolfpack.
Whoa! Actually, Paul Block had a HOA meeting tonight, and he's very involved in his HOA. He said they're going to move the monthly meetings to Thursday so as to not impede the Wolfpack in the future.
But you all are so civically minded. Everybody here mm-hmm. does something, yeah. Contributing to the greater good.
I don't know what I am, but
entertain.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. I do entertain.
So please do that tonight.
Don't sell yourself short. You're a good activist. And Kim Upham, I see by your sticker, it says I make a difference. You gave blood today, did you not?
I give blood at work.
Well,
they make it easy. They come to our workplace and half an hour later, you're on your way.
How often do you do this?
Every 8 weeks.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So do you have a count of how many pints or gallons you've given?
No, but I don't. But you know what? One thing that's cool about the Red Cross, when you give blood, they send you an email telling you where your blood was sent to if they are not going to use it in your region. Mm-hmm. So one time my blood got sent to Guam. They gave the name of the hospital. I looked it up. The pictures are gorgeous. It's right on the beach. I want to go visit my blood now.
Guam. I've been to Guam, actually. I performed in Guam for a week.
Oh, cool.
A long time ago.
So. Did you see Kim's blood while you were there?
Well, no, I didn't. I should have made a pilgrimage to see your blood. Speaking of giving blood and medical, I guess it's a medical procedure in a way, at least to give blood. The president went to Walter Reed unexpectedly, didn't he?
Yeah. And he can't even stop lying about that.
There were some Suburbans flying down the highway. So they're very, very urgent to get him into his part one of his,
right.
his exam.
Well, there's a bunch of lies. I mean, first he says that it's phase one of his checkups. I've had a few checkups in my life. They never came in phases. presidents normally get checkups every 12 months.
Yeah.
His last checkup was 9 months ago, so this is unusual.
Yeah.
Usually they're scheduled on his calendar. Actually, they're always on his calendar. This is his first hospital visit since becoming president when it was not on his calendar. Usually Walter Reed is given advance notice. They'll clear out kind of that area of the hospital for security purposes. And this time there was no security was taken because they had no advance notice the president was coming. He just showed up on a Saturday morning. So if this isn't just reek of something happening, but of course, why would we expect a straight answer out of this White House?
So what do we think? Heart stents? Do we think strokes? The symptoms of strokes are incoherent rambling and
he's been having a stroke for 4 years.
Yeah. Longer than that.
Slurring of speech. How would you know?
Uh-huh. Wow. There's been a lot of speculation about it, that's for sure. And it's kind of fun to speculate. But you're right. There are some contradictions, even in the statement, I believe, from Walter Reed, that they said it was unscheduled, but they've been planning for it for a while.
Right.
So within even the – which I'm sure he pressured them to not only make a statement but investigate the Bidens.
Right.
Walter Reed now investigating Hunter Biden. But it kind of stinks and it reeks of something.
And the president and the White House, they aren't savvy, but they're savvy enough to know that you always put hospital visits on the calendar because if you don't, people are always going to assume the worst. So I think it's fair for us to assume that there's a serious medical issue
that
happening.
Mike Pence could have been president for like 30 minutes and we wouldn't even know about it.
Yeah. And by the way, a salute to Walter Reed, whom the medical center is named for. He was the army physician who determined that malaria, which was huge, was not spread by human contact but by mosquitoes.
Wow.
So, you know, now he's, you know, his medical center is dealing with another pest
and
who shows up unexpected.
Speaking of pests, you remember when Dick Cheney became president for a few hours?
Yeah, a couple hours.
Yeah. Was that for a colonoscopy?
Gosh, what was Bush under for?
I think he put him under for a colonoscopy.
I don't know, but that was frightening.
Peaceful transition of power.
Yeah,
it's everything.
My big line when Cheney was vice president, and when I would do events when I was on KPLJ radio, and of course it was always packed with progressives waiting for whatever book reading or event. My line would be, I said, this crowd is so big, you'd think we're waterboarding Dick Cheney.
And everyone would love it, and we go right into the event.
So let's get into the first event. And Paul isn't here to give us the questions, but let's start by talking about impeachment. And I'll just mention that we're broadcasting now about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. You're probably listening to this on Wednesday or later in the week. But this afternoon, there were a couple witnesses that were Republican witnesses supposed to be bolster the case for Donald Trump. One of them was Kurt Volker, who is the former special envoy to Ukraine. And already, as of today, he's now changed his testimony that he gave behind closed doors a while ago in October. He said now that the July 10th meeting, he suddenly remembered that there was a quid pro quo discussed at this July 10th meeting. So he's changed his testimony today. And he also today said he basically threw Rudy Giuliani under the bus today. He said, quote, at the one in-person meeting I had with Mayor Giuliani on July 19th, Giuliani raised, this is his exact quote, and I rejected the conspiracy theory that Vice President Biden would have been influenced in his duties as vice president by money paid to his son. Quote, as I testified previously, I have known Vice President Biden for 24 years. He's an honorable man, and I hold him in the highest regard. So he's throwing Rudy Giuliani under the bus. He's praising Joe Biden, which probably gives Trump another trip to the hospital. And he is changing his testimony, which helps the Democrats' cause. And I'll say, I'm going to let you talk, and then I'll come back to this. But this follows more damning testimony earlier today by Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman and Jennifer Williams, who's an advisor on Russia to Vice President Mike Pence. You guys jump in. How about the impression of what you want to start with today, but the impeachment hearing so far? What have we learned? You guys take it away.
Well, I want to go back and summarize their arguments that we've heard to date. First, that it was a perfect call. Two, that there was no quid pro quo. Three, there's no harm, no foul, because the aid was eventually delivered. And the most recent one is, yeah, so he did it, but it's not impeachable. So now they're trying to go to intent. They're talking about what the president's intent was, and they're claiming that all of the witnesses so far are all hearsay because they weren't personally on the call. But this week we have 8 witnesses, and 3 of those witnesses were on the call. There are also damning testimony from other members of the State Department who overheard the call between Trump and Sondland in the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So that would be David Holmes.
It is interesting that the Republican witnesses are the ones that have to keep amending and revising their testimony.
Including Gordon Sondland.
Right. The ones that the Democrats are calling have the same story, and they're sticking to it. You know, the truth is an easy thing to keep track of. You know, it's interesting, the arguments you raised. You know, I like Paul's analogy that he's used, which is, you know, you're robbing the bank, and just before you get out the door with the bag of money, you see the cops, so you drop the bag and run out and say, look, I didn't take the money, never left the bank, it's fine. Right. I like to extend that analogy a little bit, which is the defense I'm hearing a lot today was isn't it true that Trump said no quid pro quo, no quid pro quo? It's like, yeah, he kept saying it while doing it. And, you know, it's like robbing a bank with a gun to the teller's head saying, this is not a bank robbery. This is not a bank.
I don't think Trump even knew what a quid pro quo was while he was trying to extort
Ukraine. And
have
you noticed that when he says quid pro quo, he slows down quid pro because he has trouble saying
it. It's tough.
And then Mulvaney says it directly in public. Oh, yeah, it was a quid pro quo. Right. So what?
You know, I want to say
before
that.
Did you have more before Dylan?
I do later.
Yeah.
Come
okay.
Back.
Okay.
Okay. I just kind of you know, one of the questions we had coming into tonight that we wanted to ask each other was, what is our overall impression of the hearings? And I want to say that I think Adam Schiff and the Democrats are doing a very fine job. So yeah. I think they've learned some lessons from the Brett Kavanaugh fiasco and the Robert Mueller fiasco. And this actually, they're organized. They're not repeating each other. Each of them kind of have a clear set of goals and ideas they're going to talk about. So no one's talking over each other, repeating it, or leaving things out. And The Republicans are so bad. Jim Jordan can't stop screaming. Devin Nunes is sniveling about process and making these endlessly snarky remarks.
Right.
And as snarky as they are, as childish as they are, it's very clear that Schiff and the Democrats have said, we are not going to bite.
Buy into it.
We're gonna let them throw their little pity party, their temper tantrums. We're going to be above it. And we're just going to methodically march through this process and extract all the facts that we need to. And when we're done, we'll have a clean bill.
Right. You know, I turned on – those are all great points. And I turned on the hearings today. And this is just what I turned on today. I first saw Denny Heck, who Denny's a friend. He was on my show.
Oh, he was great today.
And he's been great, actually. Denny Heck is a congressman from Washington, Washington State, just above us here in Oregon, if you get your map out, if you didn't know that.
But, upper left of the United States.
Our listeners all know that.
Yeah. Well, if there are any Trump people listening, Washington is north of Oregon.
Left coast.
Yeah. But you know, he was doing great questioning of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. And at the end of his remarks, Denny Heck was very eloquent. He said, you know, the same week that Donald Trump pardoned three U.S. service members who were either two of them were convicted of war crimes. One was about to go on trial for war crimes. In the same week that he pardoned them, and I'm going to have more to say about that later, he's trashed a guy, Colonel Vindman, who won a Purple Heart, who was awarded a Purple Heart in Iraq. Then I see Jim Jordan going on one of these screeds. All he's talking about is how they're out to get Trump. He reads a text from one of Vindman's lawyers months and months before the lawyer probably even knew of Vindman, saying, we got to get rid of Trump. So that means this is all a big conspiracy.
Right.
And they're only after Trump. Jordan doesn't deal with any facts, doesn't deal with what the witnesses are saying. It's just this, as you said, it's just we're out to get Trump. And there are plenty of gullible Americans who will believe that mm-hmm. this is just all a big conspiracy to get Trump. And then Peter Welch follows Jim Jordan. He's a great progressive congressman from Vermont. And he goes, you know, that was interesting. But my colleague, Mr. Representative Jordan, never addressed whether it was okay for the president to ask a foreign government to intervene politically on his behalf.
Right.
That's exactly what you're saying, Dylan. They're not biting into it. Mm-hmm. They're just making the in a way, they're just – letting the Republicans hang themselves.
Can I throw in one detail real quick? So on that point about the attacks on Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, Congressman Maloney of New York had a really great quote today. I don't know if you saw him.
He was great.
It's quote, here's a pro tip. If you find yourself lying about a war hero, you should probably question your choices in life, close quote. I just thought that was just so perfect.
Maloney was so good today.
Yeah,
I thought he was the prosecutor for a second. Mm-hmm. Kim, do you want to add
I'm jealous.
Stuff?
I've been earning a living all day, so I have to get my recaps in bullet points.
Well, you should listen to the Wolfpack.
And Carl.
Yeah, I know. I'm planning to later tonight.
Carl, you know, it's funny that you have to mention the time that we start because – this stuff is changing. I mean, in the car ride on the way over here, I'm learning new information to include on the show. It's just happening so fast.
And by the way, we knew that one of the Republican – well, it's been their strategy all along. One of their points is to attack the credibility of this witnesses, mm-hmm. just go after them. And one of my favorite parts today was when Jim Jordan said to Vindman, quote, your former boss, Dr. Fiona Hill, had concerns about your judgment. You know what Vindman did? He was prepared. He pulled out a performance evaluation that Fiona Hill had given him this past July and read it. Quote, Alex is a top 1% military officer and the best Army officer I have worked with in my 15 years of government service. He is brilliant, unflappable, and exercises excellent judgment.
Wow.
Unquote. So he was ready.
Right.
Jim Hines, a Democrat from Connecticut, knew that they would also attack Jennifer Williams, not Jennifer Williamson, who is running for Secretary of State here in Oregon, which is south of Washington, but Jennifer Williams, who testified today. She's an advisor to Vice President Pence on Russia, as I said. And Trump called her a never-Trumper. And Jim Hines said, would you call yourself a never-Trumper? He said it at Vindman. And Vindman said, I would call myself never-partisan.
That's great.
But also with Jennifer Williams, getting back to her, Trump called her a never-Trumper, but she said today to the committee that she actually campaigned for George W. Bush in 2004. Mm-hmm. So they're you know, these weak attacks on people, that they're all out to get Trump, that they're part of this vast conspiracy to get Trump. They knocked him down one after the other.
And did you see when Jim Jordan was questioning Ambassador Volker today?
Yes.
He ends with,
And, you know, I'm just so disgusted by Democrats that have, because of this circus, have forced you out of government. And Democrats are forcing good people out of government. I'm just
– Right.
These people live on another planet.
Right. They
well,
do.
Well, you did say, Carl, that some people will believe this. Right. And unfortunately, they're going to be aided by 6,000 purchased Facebook ads mentioning impeachment and the word hoax.
Right.
So there's an active campaign out there to.
Two or three episodes ago, we were talking about Facebook and how their policy to not fact check political ads is crazy and wrong, in our opinion, in today's environment. So more of it. By the way, also tonight, Peter Welch, whom I mentioned, the congressman from Vermont, asked both Morrison, who was testifying, Timothy Morrison, and who is the, Volker. He said, how about my analogy here of a mayor asks a police chief, tells the police chief of his city, I won't give funds for your department unless you investigate my political rival. It would be okay. And they said, no, no, no. And then they brought it to the governor. And then he said, would the president, would this be okay? And they both said no, mm-hmm. which is the heart of this. In fact, again, let's circle around to the very heart of what this is all about. Multiple witnesses, and we'll have more coming tomorrow, have testified that Donald Trump abused his constitutional power for personal gain. That's it. He tried to bribe the president of Ukraine into helping with the 2020 reelection campaign.
And that's so important. We have to keep bringing it back to the essence of what this is and the essence of what both sides are doing. So the Democrats are bringing forward witnesses who say, I heard this. I saw this. It happened. And then the Republicans are bringing forward people who say, I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't see anything. Well, I mean – If you have a murder trial and you've got four eyewitnesses and then four people who say, I don't know, I was in bed that night, you're not going to be acquitted on that. So, I mean, they're welcome to bring all these people in here. But when they say, I don't know, that's not helping you, Republicans.
Right. But what they're trying to do is confuse the issue and think this is a big partisan game so that people in the country beyond the Trump cult will buy into that. Now, let's remember last week. We had just to kind of roll a little bit of the testimony and put it into perspective. Last week, we had State Department officials, George Kent, Bill Taylor, testified that military aid to Ukraine was delayed until that country's government agreed to Trump's demand to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter. This was all last week. I think the best testimony last week was from – it was all good, but Marie Yovanovitch, she was deft. She was articulate. She was moving in her testimony.
Unflappable.
Unflappable, right? And she said that she was recalled from her post as ambassador by Trump because she would not cooperate with his efforts to extort the Ukrainian government. And really, I think the thing that may have moved some public opinion so far in this whole impeachment thing was while she was testifying, Donald Trump tweeted about her and how horrible she was, which was, in real time, witness intimidation.
Right.
Right? And I'll go back to, you know, I guess weeks ago, maybe a month ago, when Yovanovitch first went to testify behind closed doors. Trump was in front of the White House and reporters asked him about Yovanovitch. He goes, why did you get rid of her? And he goes, this is what he said. He said, she did a lot of bad things. I heard from a lot of people that she did bad things. She was bad. I heard a lot. He wouldn't specifically say what it was that she had done, but it was just bad. Timothy Morrison, who was deputy assistant to Trump, told impeachment investigators that Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, told top Ukrainian officials that both a White House meeting and U.S. military aid were contingent on a public announcement about investigations into Biden and his son Hunter. Morrison testified that Sondland was acting on direct orders from Trump. And Kim, what you said about David Holmes, he was a State Department official. He is. He overheard this phone call between Trump and Sondland. July 26th, a day after the now infamous telephone conversation between Trump and Zelensky. And Holmes told investigators Trump was talking so loudly he could hear the president clearly on the ambassador's phone. This is what he testified to. Quote, I heard President Trump ask, so is he going to do the investigation? Unquote. Holmes went on to say Ambassador Sondland replied that, quote, he is going to do it. He'll do anything you ask him to. Gordon Sondland is really the guy at the nexus of this. Mm-hmm. And he's going to testify, is it tomorrow or Thursday?
Tomorrow.
Wednesday. And this is, by the way, a guy who lives in Seattle, which is north of Portland, if you look at the map.
And the left coast is the best coast.
Right. But he owns hotel properties in both Seattle and Portland. And there have been many calls here in Portland to boycott his hotels.
There have been protests outside of several of the prominent hotels that he owns.
So, I mean, you know, what we're saying here, I think, is a very accurate description of the process. Democrats, as Dylan said, are coming with facts. They've got witnesses to what is clearly bribery. And Republicans, as you pointed out, Kim, their arguments are specious. Their arguments are irrelevant.
I want to point out what Denny Hecht's line of questioning today, this afternoon, was really effective. So one of the more aggravating theories that Republicans are putting out is that Trump was just doing his due diligence to make sure that Ukraine was not corrupt. Okay, laughable. We talked about that last week. But here's an interesting timeline here. So in March of 2019, the Department of Defense does what it normally does when these funds are kind of appropriated, is they do an inquiry into, are we releasing these funds into a state in which corruption is at a manageable level so that these funds actually will be used and not squandered? The Department of Defense in March of 2019 said, yes, we've looked into this. They are on they've shown enough improvements that we think these funds would go to good use, and we approve this release. We think it would be a good idea. Nothing happens in March from Trump. April 2019, President Zelensky gets elected president of Ukraine on the platform of reforming the country, getting rid of corruption. And then in July of 2019, they get a new parliament that's the same party as his. So now you basically have one party control of Ukraine, all of which is united behind fixing corruption in the country. The money's not released until September of 2019, two days after the whistleblower comes forward. And so the question is, what was Trump doing all these months to figure out
what he was doing?
Rudy Giuliani and his two goons, Igor and
they Sal wanted to make sure that the new president was on board with investigating the Bidens over nothing.
And in between those two periods of time that you talked about earlier in the year and July when the phone call happened, 50 civilians died on their flank, their eastern flank with Russia, where there is an act of war, and over 13,000 Ukrainians have died so far. So there are real consequences.
And think of these Republicans, not only in the House but in the Senate, who are making excuses for Trump. It was the House and the Senate that voted to appropriate these funds. This is the lawful process here. They ought to be a little bit upset that the President of the United States was upholding and blocking the will of the United States Congress.
Absolutely.
Even before.
And himself. He signed it into law.
Right. Absolutely.
And now, can we talk about the witnesses a little bit here? I mean, what's interesting to me is that when this first started, you heard people attacking the whistleblower as
they still are.
He's third, fourth-hand information. We should give this guy absolutely no credibility. This is hearsay. He's useless. Don't even listen to this guy. So now that it's been corroborated by, I don't know, a dozen people, and we have all these witnesses now they're saying, wait a minute, the whistleblower is the most important witness. Right. We can't move forward until the whistleblower. I mean, which way is it?
Right.
And so
actually, he's the most useless witness now because what he said was corroborated by everyone.
And then they're making the case basically for the Democrats that the people with firsthand knowledge that are in the White House should come and testify.
Right.
So Bolton and others.
Exactly, Kim. Right. They're saying the evidence Democrats.
Why don't they show up then?
The Democrats.
Give them over.
The evidence the Democrats are putting forth are saying is too weak, but they have access to all the documents, all the firsthand information.
Right.
Where's Giuliani? Where's Mick Mulvaney? Where's Donald? They could bring these people in here to defend themselves, and they're putting up no defense.
You know why?
Of course.
You know why they're not showing up? Two words, under oath.
Right.
At the second that Donald Trump opens his mouth, he's going to contradict a million facts.
And I wish they would start putting the members of Congress under oath before they start asking questions.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So that leads well into our next question.
Which is?
Regarding Roger Stone and some of the other
impeachment. Yeah, before we get there, and it is a really good segue, but I want to mention Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He's getting a lot of flack, and he should, for not supporting Marie Yovanovitch or other State Department employees, civil servants. I mean, this is unbelievable. This is a man, just like William Barr, the Attorney General, who's putting the allegiance, his political allegiance to the President of the United States, over his sworn duty as Secretary of State to stand up for the policy of this country and the workers, the civil servants, under his supervision. And I think he should be impeached as well. I mean, I know this is a focus to get the facts out about Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and this whole shadow effort that Rudy Giuliani was involved in. And let me just add as an ancillary thing, Mike Pompeo yesterday on Monday said the United States would no longer consider West Bank settlements to be, quote, inconsistent with international law. Let me tell you, I'm a big supporter of Israel, but the settlements are illegal under international law. Nothing that Pompeo says is going to change that. And, you know, are we adherents to the Geneva Convention or not? This is another example of people like Trump and Pompeo trying to curry favor with Israel in violation of a treaty that we have signed, longstanding practice.
And prop up Netanyahu.
And you know, with right. Mike Pompeo, I don't know if you guys watch – I've been watching Mark Shields on Fridays on NPR's Face – not Face the Nation, but the – for 20 years I've been watching Mark Shields on NPR.
And he doesn't do any PBS. Botox. That's the amazing.
He's such a mild-mannered person. But if you saw last Friday, him talking about Mike Pompeo's abandonment of his staff and ambassadors,
awful.
He called him AWOL. He called him a disgrace. I have never seen Mark Shields attack anybody like he did Mike Pompeo. And I'll say it was deserved.
And Chuck Rosenberg, by the way, who was a member of, I believe, the Bush Obama and a little bit of the Trump administration's in the Justice Department called him a coward because Mike Pompeo is continuing, again, allegiance to the President of the United States and I'm sure not testifying or covering up what has gone on instead of being the Secretary of State for the United States of America. Kim, you wanted to talk about, you know, all the people who are already caught up in this. And the same day last week where Trump was intimidating Marie Yovanovitch, a witness in real time, we also had Roger Stone being convicted on all counts. So this doesn't help the Republicans' argument either.
Right. So, I mean, Kim, do you want to
go ahead. Jump in.
All right. So just – this phrase keeps coming back through my mind, which is all the best people. This is what we
drain the swamp.
This is what we were promised, right? All the best people drain the swamp. And instead you get the people, I mean, the list now of people in the administration that have been indicted and or thrown in prison is getting longer and longer.
34 so far, just from the Mueller report.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, and we're not talking about like underlings.
There's at least eight convicted felons at least.
His campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, Manafort's deputy on the campaign, Rick Gates, National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, policy advisor, George Papadopoulos, and now Roger Stone, who is one of his closest advisors. I mean, I was curious. So I went back to look to see how many people from 8 years of the Obama administration had been indicted. I could find zero. Mm-hmm. So if our listeners can find someone who's been indicted from either the campaign or the administration.
He wasn't a legitimate president. Right. He wasn't even born here.
The closest I could find, though, I found one person. What's that?
Were you going to say Michael Flynn?
No. No. The one person I could find was former Obama White House counsel Greg Craig, who was indicted recently. But he used to work in the Obama White House. And you want to know what he was indicted for? For lying to the Justice Department about work he was doing with Paul Manafort in Ukraine. That is the one guy from the Obama administration. And that's for activities he did after he left the administration. So when people want to talk about the corrupt Obama administration, just ask him, okay, how many arrests, indictments, imprisonments? Zip.
When Trump met with Obama, there's one person that Obama said, do not hire this person, and that is Michael Flynn.
Right.
What did Trump do? Turn around and hired him.
You know, I don't know if anyone has watched. I had to stomach it. It's actually a fascinating documentary out last year or this year calling Mr. Stone about Roger Stone and how he's always been this dirty tricks guy and bullshit artist. But when you watch this documentary, you see how simpatico his brain is with Trump's brain. They think the same way. And one of the funniest lines, I don't know if you knew it, but Roger Stone on his back has a big tattoo of Richard Nixon because that's his idol. I think the funniest line I put on Facebook when he was convicted of all counts, and one of my friends wrote, showed the picture of his back because he loves to show off this tattoo and said, Nixon's finally going to jail.
I love it.
That's a good one.
Love it. Right. So he is now – Roger Stone is now the sixth Trump associate to be convicted under the Mueller probe. He faced seven counts and was convicted on all of them by a jury in D.C. for lying to Congress and witness tampering related to his role in the 2016 campaign. And he, as far as we can tell from the Mueller report, was the intermediary between WikiLeaks and the Trump campaign when they hacked the when they released the hacked DNC emails.
Right. You know, this gives me a little more faith in the jury system, because I know when 43% of this country still thinks that Trump's doing a fine job, and probably a third would back him even if he did shoot someone in Times Square. I've always had this fear in the back of my mind that how are you going to get 12 jurors to convict a Trumpster if it only takes, you know, one or two crazy guys on the jury, you know, Fox News watchers? How are you going to do it? And what we've been seeing is that
the evidence is overwhelming. Right. Yeah. And by the way, since you mentioned the Mueller report, Kim, one of the screed that I told you about, the one that I turned the TV on to see from Jim Jordan, he was saying, Mueller report, nothing. What do you mean nothing? You know, they couldn't find anything on Trump. In my opinion, Trump should be impeached and removed from office from Section 1 and 2 of the Mueller report. And we haven't seen the entire Mueller report. So this is more of the jujitsu from Jordan.
And there are other Trump associates who have gone to jail as well. Do you guys want to talk about those?
Give us some highlights.
All right.
Michael and how Cohen, they're doing in jail.
Yeah. Michael Cohen, personal lawyer and fixer, sentenced last December to 3 years in prison for lying to Congress, campaign violations, and tax evasions. He got a separate 2 months for lying to Congress about the Moscow Trump Tower deal and the timing.
Yeah. Let me just add before we move on from this. This may not be on your radar yet, but there's another whistleblower complaint. I don't know if you've seen this, but Senate investigators, and this is a bipartisan investigation. It's our own Ron Wyden, Senator Wyden, who is vice chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and the chair, Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, are now the investigators on the staffs of both Wyden and Grassley are looking into a whistleblower complaint that a Trump political appointee may have meddled with the IRS audit of both Trump's and Pence's tax returns. So this is being investigated now. And staffers have met with a whistleblower last month, and they're continuing with follow-up interviews right now. And this whistleblower reportedly said that they know at least one Treasury Department political appointee attempted to properly interfere with these annual audits. So there you go. More coming down the pike. Hey, I want to begin our next segment with a question. And I haven't told you guys what this question is because I just know you're going to have an immediate and visceral response to this yes or no question.
Kim gets to go first.
Okay. All right. This will get us into our second category tonight. Hopefully, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg will remain healthy and an active member of the High Court for the foreseeable future. 42 days from now will be January 1st, 2020. If poor health forces her to step down or if she passes away in 2020, will Mitch McConnell honor the McConnell rule and not consider any nominee in a presidential election year? Yes or no?
Hell no. They're going to push through whoever the Federalist Society recommends and call it good.
I'm going to trust Mitch McConnell on this one. When he says he'll shove her through, him is going to be a man. He'll shove him through.
Because he already said it was actually at a Republican group, and he says that someone asked him if a nominee happened in 2020. He laughed and said, we'll confirm him.
You know, and I was thinking about this. I was wondering if Democrats could deny them a quorum in the Senate, kind of like they've done here in Oregon, where we had the Republicans walk out to deny Democrats a quorum. unfortunately, what I've seen, though, and so for impeachment and other votes, a quorum in the U.S. Senate is only 51. And so as long as they get the Republicans there.
They don't have the numbers, and they would have to hold up the Senate continually because McConnell would bring it up at any time he could.
Can you guys imagine if Trump actually got three members on the court?
Well, yes. I got one word for you. Vote. Okay. Vote.
Oh, wait. That's what I forgot to do last week. Thank you, Carl.
So I bring this up because let's just talk about Mitch McConnell for a second here, because we don't get to hear, because of all the noise out there about impeachment Trump, and Trump loves to have his name out there and succeeds at it every day. We don't know, or we don't hear, some of us know, what the Democratic House, the 116th Congress, has already passed to benefit, in our opinion, this country and this world, that Mitch McConnell is letting die in the Senate. I want to talk about H.R. 1 very briefly, but did you guys do you want to chime in with some other things that Pelosi's House has already passed that Mitch McConnell won't even bring up in the upper chamber?
Sure. So
I don't know what the count is right now, but as of July 1st of this year, the House had passed 569 bills that McConnell isn't bringing up. So when I say bringing up, I don't mean they're not getting a vote. They're not even getting assigned to a committee where they can begin the hearings process.
He's the Grim Reaper, the self-appointed Grim Reaper.
HR 1, I think, is the most important, which you're going to cover.
Yeah.
But what I found is when people want to tell me, oh, the do-nothing Democrats, all they want to do is investigate Trump, I will come back with some of these laws and say, hey, I bet you support some of these things. And that usually causes them to go away. But just one of the acts that is fantastic is background checks for guns would require universal background checks for the sale of guns, whether it's at a gun show or somewhere else.
Which upwards of 90% of Americans say they want.
And it's also the most progressive gun safety legislation that we've had in decades.
Right. There's the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would strengthen measures to counter the growing pay gap between men and women. Nothing's happening in the Senate. Kim, did you want to chime
in? Yeah, there's a Dreamer Act. It's called American Dream and Promise Act, and it would protect the dreamers and establish—
which over 70% of Americans support.
And establish a path to citizenship for more than 2 million immigrants without legal status.
There's the Raise the Wage Act, which would raise the minimum wage $15 by the year 2025. So not exactly extreme, but progressive. Again, no action.
And much needed.
All right. Infrastructure plans.
And let me interject here that Trump always said he wants all these great things. He wants a great health care plan. He wants infrastructure plan, protects Social Security, all that. When he took office, the one thing I thought we would get out of the Congress and the White House was a really good infrastructure package. And a lot of these things, and he could tell McConnell, you bring these up. That's right. The point here, and he doesn't. He's saying, I'm not going to do infrastructure. I'm not going to do gun safety until they drop the impeachment. Which he knows that's a constitutional requirement of the House. It's never going to happen. So essentially, Trump is saying no to these things along with McConnell.
And I don't understand why it would be – if he brought up a really big infrastructure bill –
it'd be good for the economy.
It'd be good for the economy. Everybody would support it.
Got to figure out how to pay for it.
He doesn't worry about that. They're Republicans. But he could campaign on that so hard. So people that say he can't get anything done or he doesn't work in a bipartisan manner, he could really gut those arguments. I mean, not for those who really know what's happening, but to a lot of people in the middle who are in the kind of going one way or the other, he could win them over with a good infrastructure bill. So
it's all about his ego. Anyone who attacks him, that moves up to the number one agenda item, and he will fight it tooth and nail because, that's who he is.
They're also not passing any long-term spending plans. They just passed a 30-day extension into December. So because there's dispute over him using monies that have been allocated by Congress for other purposes for the border wall.
What other good things has Pelosi passed that Kim, that McConnell's not bringing up?
She passed a bill to strengthen healthcare and lower prescription drug costs. There were 5 Republicans that supported it, and that would lower prescription drug prices and bolster the ACA to protect those with pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm. HR 1, I want to focus on just very briefly for the next minute because HR 1 means it was the first bill passed by the 116th Congress. It's to fight corruption and protect the vote. I mean, this is the heart of our democracy. Some of its provisions, it would start some public financing of campaigns. And boy, if there's anything that I think could make our system better, it's public financing of campaigns. This bill would also pass the Disclose Act, which requires super PACs and dark money groups to make their donors public. It includes and passes the Honest Ads Act, which would require Facebook and Twitter – we're talking about that just now, Kim – to disclose the source of money for political ads on their platforms. It would require candidates for president and vice president to disclose 10 years of his or her tax returns. It would create an ethical code for the Supreme Court, which we do not have right now. It would end partisan gerrymandering in federal elections and prohibit voter roll purging. It would make Election Day a national holiday for federal employees and encourage businesses to do the same. And it would increase election security and require the Director of National Intelligence to make regular checks on foreign threats. There is a Senate version of it passed the House, of course. There's a Senate version of this called For the People Act. All 47 Democrats and independents are for it. Mitch McConnell said it won't see the light of day.
It's so interesting. You break down what that law does. It's just like as American as apple pie.
Right.
Wanting to know where money is coming from.
Right.
Stopping gerrymandering. I just wonder how warped of an individual you have to be to go all the way to the U.S. Senate and fight against people knowing who's funding campaigns, right. fighting against people having the right to vote. It's unbelievable.
And go ahead, Kim.
It would also have online registration for voter registration. It would have same day registration, which let me tell you, as a person who supports voting rights, that would be tremendous. And then it would also require states to register people who don't voluntarily register now.
You know, and going back, Dylan, with what you just said about infrastructure, I think most Republicans, and in a lot of red states, support this. Mm-hmm. I know that Montana, for instance, had one of the strongest laws against money in politics. And it was because in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the copper barons in Montana were literally on the Capitol steps in Helena giving bribes to people. And in fact, the first challenge that the Supreme Court took up after Citizens United mm-hmm. was Montana. And they rejected that 5-4 along the same lines.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That reminded me of a story that I hadn't thought about in a long time. When I used to work in the U.S. Senate in Washington, D.C.
You worked in the Senate?
Yeah. I mean, I was at intern level, so very bottom. But I talked to high-level staffers that were high up. And one staffer told me that he had seen lobbyists in the cloakroom, and they're not even supposed to be in the cloakroom, handing out checks mm-hmm. as members yep. of the Senate walked onto the floor to cast votes.
But the point in this is I believe a lot of even Trump voters really maybe believed he was going to drain the swamp. As you know, he is a swamp. He's been the swamp his whole life, getting people to Trump University. It's all a fraud. It's all a con. The fact that they would trust a con man to drain the swamp is counterintuitive, but here we are. But this stuff, Democrats should campaign on this. They really should. And I give Elizabeth Warren credit. Mm-hmm. I've been down on her for Medicare for All. But one of her strongest planks is corruption.
She needs to talk about that more.
Before we finish up with someone we don't know, you might not know, I just want to mention I had a chance to meet Vice President Biden last Saturday. He came to Portland for a private fundraiser. And by the way, he's about to raise $2 million in the last couple of weeks. So he's about to announce that. So
is that from one person?
No, it's not. Sondland. It's from online donations. Stop. It's from online donations. But he's got, you know, he wants to announce this before the debate, which is tomorrow night. There were about 110 people at this and, you know, I do like Joe Biden a lot. And I'm not just saying this because I like him running. But I had a chance to get a photograph with him formally, talk with him briefly, and then after the event, he mingled with people. I got another photograph with him and talked with him again. He spoke for about 30 minutes, 25 to 30 minutes. He was right on topic. I mean, he hit first.
He wasn't confused or anything.
No, that's my point here. In fact, the one thing that I don't like about one of the things I don't like was that when he says, "Hey, folks," mm-hmm. over and over, he said it once. I was
good.
Once in 25 minutes. So I don't know if his advisors are working on him to get that phrase out of there. But he hit why we need to get rid of Donald Trump really firmly. And he's flat out said if he gets another 4 years, NATO will be done. He talked about his betrayal of the Kurds. He himself knows the leaders of the Kurds, and that's one of the reasons that I like his bona fides in foreign policy is he knows the players here. He spoke eloquently about the need to get at least 100,000 new teachers on the job, all the lunch bucket issues. And he really connects with this blue-collar stuff. He really knows what he's talking about, how people, you know, have to drive for another year with bald tires because they can't afford a new set of four tires.
So he's not calling himself a blue-collar billionaire?
No. but his presentation was very good. He was funny. He elicited laughs. He got applause. And then the best part was he waded into the crowd and took pictures and so forth. I said I grew up in Hatton Township, New Jersey. He knows exactly where it is. His wife Jill was from Hamilton, New Jersey. He does look older. There's no question about it. He's thinner than I thought, Joe Biden used to look. But he didn't miss a beat. And, I have no idea whether he's going to win the nomination, whether he's going to keep up in the money race. But I didn't see the things that I've worried about with him. Gaffes, he was right on in everything. He knows his stuff. And he connected with people, which I like.
I'm glad to hear that. I'll vote for him if he's the nominee. But I will say that it's a lot different doing 25-minute meet and greet with supporters
sure.
and a 3-hour debate under the hot lights.
Well, the debates are an hour and a half.
Some of them have been 3 hours.
Well, I think 2 hours of presidential. Candidates. You know, I've mentioned this on Facebook that John Kerry wiped the floor all three of his debates with George Bush and still lost. Obama was horrible in his first debate with Mitt Romney, still won. Hillary wiped the floor with Trump, in my opinion, and still lost. I think he can be prepped, or any of the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Let me expand the frame. Any can be prepped very well for 2 hours to go against Trump three times. So I'm not as worried about the debate. But yes, I do have concerns about his age. I'm just saying that last Saturday, he looked really good. He was on point. He connected with the crowd both with humor, with passion. And I thought it was terrific. And by the way, the people that hosted this also have hosted Cory Booker. And they've invited any Democratic nominee to come to Portland for this kind of one-on-one.
I'd like to see Kamala Harris personally come to Portland.
Well, you know, right now she may be closing offices.
I'd like to see Sherrod Brown come to Portland so I can get out.
Oh, my God.
So I can get out of rubber hose and beat that guy until he decides to run.
You know, I got a text from Dylan last night about – well, tell me what you told me before we wrap up.
He was on Pod Save America last night.
This is Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
Yeah. And who he is now has come out forcefully against for abolishing the filibuster because he said it's a mechanism of conservation.
Conservatization.
Something like that. But brilliant. He's charismatic. He's smart. He's right on all the issues.
He would have carried Ohio,
He can talk to blue-collar voters like nobody else can. He would beat Donald Trump by 10 to 15 points and beat him by 100 electoral votes. I am confident of that.
Why didn't he run?
I don't know.
Why didn't he run? I hear this over and over. He would have won Ohio. Mm-hmm. He would have won Pennsylvania. He would have won Michigan. He would have won Wisconsin.
I think he wins Indiana and Missouri.
He could win Indiana and Missouri as well. Why didn't he run? Anybody know?
No.
You have to ask him. All right. By the way, I asked Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, if he ever gets tired of this, you know, shaking hands. And he goes, absolutely not. And I, you know, for most people, politicos, you would think, oh, that's just a knee-jerk reaction. He loves it. You can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell that he loves it.
How many people did he massage their necks? Women in the crowd.
Yeah. You look relaxed, Carl.
Yeah, I look very relaxed. A little bit over there. Oh, I'm from South Jersey down there. Okay.
I'm wondering if I can share some good news from this.
Please.
I really want to give a shout out to the protesters at the Kavanaugh dinner at the Federalist Society. This is a black tie fundraiser that happened last week. And the Federalist Society is a group that gives money to conservative candidates and then recommends conservative judicial appointments. Brett Kavanaugh was their keynote speaker at their gala this week. Outside the venue, they had a giant screen and loudspeaker playing Christine Blasey Ford's testimony.
Cool.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, nice.
They
touch.
Also had people dressed as event staff handing out programs that they had created.
Mm.
And then inside the Pièce de la Résistance, inside the venue, when Kavanaugh was introduced, a whole group of people began blowing rape whistles and shouting, "We believe survivors and we believe Christine Ford." And I hope he gets this kind of dogged resistance everywhere he goes, because for me, it was just last year at this time, very personal to
Kim, I'm really glad you brought this up because, we won't get him off the court. He's got a lifetime appointment. But, you know, the same feeling that you had, I can't count the women who related to Christine Blasey Ford and were so upset. And even my dental hygienist, she couldn't even talk or speak for days after that. She was so angry. I want this to be part of the visceral reaction in the 2020 election.
It was Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas writ large all over again. And that's the entire reason I got into politics in 1992.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. I hope that this kind of resistance, as you say, is before the American public throughout the 2020 campaign. And I hope the people who have accused Donald Trump, the women who have accused him of either sexual assault or rape in some case, continue to speak out. Let's end with something you – thank you, Kim. That's really encouraging. I love to see the activism. Something you may not know. Dylan, you got something?
Yeah, I do have something.
All right.
Before we get to it, I just want to quickly say John Lovett had a quote yesterday that I thought was so powerful. And he said the impeachment hearings was what he called a revolt of those with integrity against those without integrity.
Yep.
I thought that was so perfect.
And who are you going to believe, really? I mean, the people who are testifying against what Trump did are either career civil servants, people who have been decorated and their patriotism to this country is so – it should be so well known versus Trump, who has lied, what, 14,000 times as a con man. Right. And all the people that you mentioned in his orbit who are either under investigation, indicted, or are already gone to prison – who are you going to believe?
Right.
And that really is what it comes down to here.
These courageous public service servants have really done themselves justice and made the State Department look really
good.
But
there are fewer and fewer of them as they leave for the exit.
I hope that people will at least investigate some of these people and see what they do for the country on all levels so we can kind of move away from what Ronald Reagan put on steroids. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're from – I'm here for the federal government, here to help, which was just a bunch of nonsense. Kim, what do you have that we may not know?
All right. I've got two short things. The first is that in World War II, Oscar statues were made out of wood.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. I'm assuming they had some shortages on
Must metal. Be. I did not know that. And I love the Oscars, and that's an Oscar.
I wonder what the military was using all that gold for.
I mean, aren't they like pewter on the inside, and then maybe they're dipped in, who knows? and the second thing is that there are three words in the dictionary that have, at least three, that have no rhyme. And these three that I have in mind are three colors.
Orange.
Yep. Purple and silver.
Turquoise.
Oh, there's a good one. That's probably an extra one.
Turquoise,
extra credit.
Orange, purple, and silver?
Yeah.
I will just say from the top of my head, do not believe the orange maniac in the White House. Believe Colonel Vindman, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who won a Purple Heart.
Aww.
And you know, we're going for the silver here.
With our Oscar statues.
With these hearings. And let's go for the gold and win the presidency in 2020. All right,
good job. All right. I like it.
mine is I love this little factoid. I didn't know it. Dylan, you may not be old enough to remember a rotary phone.
Yes, I've used rotary phones before.
Okay, you've used a rotary phone.
Yes.
Kim, are you old enough to remember to cover my bases?
And party lines.
Don't admit to being that old. on a rotary phone, as many of you out there know, millennials, go look it up. Some numbers are faster to dial than others. If you dial one or two, it's quick, quick. Mm-hmm. If you have to dial nine or the zero, you have to go all the way around.
Right.
So when the United States created area codes in the 1940s, it gave the major cities quicker area codes. That's why New York is 212. That's why Chicago is 312, and that's why Los Angeles is 213. There were more people in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. So because of the number of people calling, they gave them a shorter area code by rotary dial. Isn't that cool?
Wow, that's really cool.
So if you're living in a place that has nine in your area code, no one cared about you in the 1940s.
So two phone stories. First time I showed my kids a rotary phone, I asked them what it was, and they guessed a clock because it had the numbers in a circle. Second, I grew up in a town, Prairie City, Oregon, that was so small that you only dialed the last four digits of the phone number to call somebody in the town.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't even know.
I thought you grew up in John Day.
Oh, we spent a year in Prairie City.
We summered in John Day.
We left the schools in Prairie City, left much to be desired.
Wow. Well, interesting phone facts there. I love it. Prairie what? I didn't even know.
Prairie City. It's 13 miles east of John
Day. How many people live in Prairie City, Oregon? Do you have any idea?
John Day was too busy and crowded.
I would guess 800.
Does this include the prairie dogs, or are you talking about people?
I don't think there's any prairie dogs in Prairie City.
Oh, my God. I never even knew it existed. Yeah. Thank you guys for a zesty conversation. We really miss Paul, and
I still have my good news to share.
Oh, you have good news?
Yes.
Oh, man.
So something you don't know that might be good news.
Okay. So you're melding the two areas.
Right.
Here.
So I try to keep this positive.
Okay.
So the city of Chicago has been trying to promote literacy for socioeconomically disadvantaged portions of the city.
Yeah.
And so they've put in place a series of policies to encourage people to come to the library. So one thing they've done, for example, is opening the libraries on Sundays. But more interesting though, is that they have a policy where they've eliminated overdue fines. So now in Chicago, when you check out a book, there's no overdue fines, which has increased people coming into the library. But there's been an unexpected benefit, which is that thousands of books that have been missing for years are suddenly coming back into the libraries.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
And the rate of return of books is now up 240% since they've enacted this policy.
That is wonderful. Yeah. And I'll bet you, just hearing that, that is the one thing we can be assured of that Trump never violated. Never sending back a library book on time because I don't believe he's ever checked one out. Right. I don't believe he's ever read one. Those are really great. Thank you, guys. Paul Block will be back next week, and he's doing his due diligence for a homeowners association near us. And we're so proud to come to you from the Steel Door Gallery, Lane Gallery, 24th, and Raleigh here in Portland, Oregon. Two really good galleries merged as one. So if you're up in this area, please stop by. You can see where we podcast.
Kim? Carl, do you think that people should rate and review us?
I think – why? I'm so glad you asked.
We've been working really hard to prepare for this show.
We really want you to rate and review us on all the platforms. If you listen on Google Play or on iTunes or on Spotify, you can – I believe on all three platforms you can rate and review us. Tell your friends about this. You're going to, I think, get some really interesting summations and perspectives on the days and weeks and months events. And we want people to learn and be educated, not like these Republicans who just want to shut it up, sweep it under the rug. And that was another thing. Who said that, it was Ron Johnson of Wisconsin said, It would be better if the whistleblower just kept this to himself and we wouldn't have to air it. Yeah, well.
You guys are gross.
Yeah.
And, Carl, since Thanksgiving is coming up, we're going to need to have the facts and figures at the top of mind.
We will arm you for your Thanksgiving dinner
talk
wars.
Talk to your uncle that's curmudgeonly Trump supporters.
I will not tell the full story of when I put down Nancy Reagan at Thanksgiving and my mother threw the cranberry sauce at me. So that actually happened and splattered on the wall, and the stain really never came out. So that was always our Carl was really nasty to Nancy Reagan moment. I think Nancy looks better in retrospect, by the way. So I might apologize for that. All right. Thank you guys very much. You've listened to the Wolfpack, wolfpackpdx.com. I'm Carl Wolfson along with Kim Upham and Dylan Hides. Our producer is Patrick Zahn. We'll talk to you next week.